Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hi, and welcome once again to History Dweebs. I am Tim, and the topic of our podcast today is the assassination of Huey P. Long. Huey Long, for those of you who are not familiar with the story, was governor of Louisiana for a long time. He was also a U.S. senator, and he was assassinated. And we're going to talk about his life and the events leading up to his assassination, some of which are still kind of in dispute today. But before we do, I'd like to introduce my co-host. I should start off by saying Brandy is not with us today. She has a some family issues going on, so she won't be here for this podcast, but we hope that she'll be back with us soon. But in the meantime, let me introduce my co-host, the very honorable, the moral compass of our podcast, and really a leader among men. The very honorable Reverend Colonel Charles Beauregard Hawk Waters III, affectionately known as the Southern Gentleman. How are you today, Colonel?
Couldn't be better today, Timmy. I got to go up to Chicago, spend some time with the boys.
This is over Thanksgiving.
Over Thanksgiving.
And so did you have a good time?
We had a really good time. The boys didn't torment me.
Oh, well, that's good.
Well, I mean, they tormented me to the point where, you know.
Yeah, but just limited torment.
Yeah, they kept it down. Yeah. They kept it down to, you know, Taylor asked me a very interesting question, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
He said, Dad, and we're just sitting on the couch, and Taylor's reading a book, and he just says, Dad, you ever think about birdhouses?
About birdhouses?
Birdhouses.
Okay.
And I said, Taylor, I spend very little time, son, thinking about birdhouses. He's like, where do birds live, Dad? I said, well, they live in nests in trees. And he said, so we cut down the trees to get the wood to make the birdhouses.
That does seem a contradiction, doesn't it? A paradox.
It just, it scares me how the boy's mind works.
Well, he's got a point, though. He does have a point.
But I'm excited. We're sad, very sad for the devil. She's got some, and the devil's not private about this stuff, so we'll just say it. Her grandmother is not doing well.
Yes.
And she is in our thoughts.
Absolutely.
And, you know, she could not be here today. So while, since the devil could not be here today, Timmy, it allows us, since she can't be here, to do higher level history, Timmy. And
so you mean we're going to be able to do some topics that we, you know, kind of above her head.
Above her head. Yeah. And, you know, everybody talks about Donald.
Uh-huh.
You know, everybody wants to talk about Donald.
Donald Trump?
No, Donald Duck, Timmy.
Okay.
But nobody wants to get into the details, because it's a shady history. It's a sordid thing about Huey, Louie, and Dewey. How did they come about?
No. This is about Huey Long, Colonel. Not Huey, the nephew of Donald Duck. Huey Long, who was the U.S. senator and governor and potential presidential candidate.
The Kingfish?
The Kingfish, yes.
The Kingfish?
Yes, yes.
Okay, well, I got a bunch of stuff here on a bunch of ducks.
Maybe we'll do that one next time, Colonel. Before we get started.
Okay, can you give me a couple minutes to regroup here, Timmy?
Regroup a little bit, Colonel. And while you're doing that, I'll give a shout out to our sponsors on Patreon. How's that sound?
Okay, that sounds good to me.
I know.
I feel a little unprepared now.
You're a little embarrassed now, you seem. Okay, so we want to give a shout out to the folks who support us so generously on Patreon. If you would like to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/historydweebs. You can give a little, you can give a lot, or how much, Colonel?
You can just give a wee little bit if you like. Wee bit.
Everything helps, and we're very, very grateful for all the support that you provide us. And we have a list of patrons that we'd like to give a shout out to because they do support the podcast, and we're very grateful to them. And those are Alicia and Chip. We got a new Patreon sponsor who's very sweet, and she also is new to our group on Facebook, and that's Jen Moyer. Jen, you're very generous. Thank you so much for your support and for joining our group. She says she's been listening for a while, and she just joined the group and also now a Patreon supporter. So thank you very much, Jen. Brandy McBride, thank you, Brandy, for your support. Andrew Happ, Lisa, I hope I said that right, Lisa. Amber Scoville, Jahara, of course, Jennifer Siemens and her son Hunter, and mom Linda, thank you very much. Angelo, thank you for your support. Bridget Clavey, thank you, Bridget. Cindy Lou has been a sponsor for us for some time now, as has Charlie from the Insight Podcast. We thank you all very much. And, of course, the Wonder Dog, Rudy, who is I think he's using us for tax purposes, but, you know, he's not really going above and beyond, but,
Rudy's,
you know, we appreciate
Rudy's always working an angle on something, too.
Yeah, I think he's anticipating some of the changes in the tax laws and thought he'd jump in and support us. But we appreciate it, Rudy.
I have found my dog to be embarrassing at times, Timmy.
Oh, really? Why is that?
Yeah, because the dog can be incredibly sexist.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yes, if Renee is walking him and a male approaches, you will hear a low growl emitting from Rudy's throat.
Okay.
And you've been around Rudy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Rudy's a friendly dog. He's a lovable guy. But if it's just Renee and she's just walking just her alone, Rudy will, every man that he sees is like, yeah, I know what you want to do to my mom, or just move along, nothing to see here.
So he's in protective mode.
I think he's jealous. That's what I think it is.
Yeah, you don't want to share her affections.
Yeah, he's a good boy, and he can keep the love offerings coming. His back is healing up.
Oh, that's
but,
good.
He's
in recovery.
Pushed a disc in his back. Yeah.
Is he on Oxycontin yet?
He is on Tramadol, doggy painkillers. And it was kind of funny to see him because he get a little. Rudy's an energetic dog.
Uh-huh. So he's like mellowed out. And
yeah,
he's
all chilling.
He's got Floyd. Or?
He's got Netflix on. I'll come in. He's got his headphones on, eating Doritos. I think it works like marijuana.
Yeah. All right.
Okay. But he's doing good, so I'm glad.
Shout out to Rudy. Thank you for your support, Rudy. All right. Let's talk about Huey P. Long. Want to?
Let's do that, Timmy.
Okay, so Huey Pierce Long, Jr. was born on August 30th, 1893, in Winfield, which is in the Win Parish, a small town in north central Louisiana. So I know you, being a Southern gentleman, you're very familiar with
that. That's close to the heart, Timmy. That's where the Colonel family hails from.
Yeah, so you probably had a lot of, very familiar with Huey Long. So
I know the Kingfish well, and luckily, you know, I got, you threw me off because when you said we were doing Huey.
Yeah, I know.
I assumed we'd do his brothers. Uh-huh. But luckily, I'm able to adapt quickly because I know a lot about Huey.
All right, well, good. I'm glad. So our listeners, I'm sure, are probably relieved. He was born the son of Huey Pierce Long Sr., obviously, and his mother's name was Catalonia, which is a kind of a weird name, but whatever. He was the seventh of nine surviving children. So he grew up in a farm family, but they were middle class. And he was homeschooled as a young man. He later attended school, but at first he was homeschooled. And he had a remarkable memory. He did well. I mean, he comes, I mean, if you know the story of Huey Long, and if you ever see him on newsreels, old newsreels, he looks kind of like a buffoon, but he actually was pretty intelligent in terms of, I mean, I think he went 1 year of college at Louisiana State and before he took the bar exam.
And he talked him into allowing him to take the bar.
Yeah, Louisiana is one of the few states in the country where you can just sit for the bar exam. You don't have to have a law degree or anything. So,
you know, this is a timely one, Timmy, because there's some, what you're going to notice and through here are, you know, again, we don't get too political on our show,
mm-hmm.
but there are some, you know, this election we have was a, yeah, we haven't really seen anything like it.
Right.
You know, I mean, we
have. Yeah, and Huey Long has, I mean, Donald Trump has drawn comparisons. There's been comparisons drawn to Huey Long.
To him, Huey Long got, and you'll get into that, but he found a resource of power that had not been tapped
right
before.
And most, these were people who in who had kind of been left behind.
Right.
And so we'll get into that momentarily.
But I mean, it's very...
But it depends on what side of the fence you're on politically, I guess, or people, you know, like with Trump, I think people either love him or they hate him. And that was the way with Huey Long. And
with Huey Long, they thought that he was either a savior or a Satan.
Yes, exactly. You
know? And
there's arguments to be made for both, I think.
Yeah. And I think Huey Long turned out to be a little bit of both. I mean, he turned out to be... he's just, to me, one of the most interesting characters.
He really is. So let me get back a little bit to his background. In 1908, after completing the 11th grade, he circulated a petition protesting, they added the 12th grade, and he protested that he would have to go another year, and he got kicked out of school. But he won a debating scholarship, and he got a year's scholarship to Louisiana State, LSU, which kind of became his alma mater. And when he later became governor and senator, he really built that school up a lot of, you know, through state funds that Louisiana State University became what it is today. And so he was a real supporter of LSU all the way up to his death. But Huey got bored in college, so he had the gift of gab. And so he spent 5 years after high school as a traveling salesman, selling books, selling canned goods, patent medicines. So he also worked as an auctioneer. And he related well to people, and he had, like I said, he had the gift of gab, as I know you can relate to, Colonel.
You've been known to tell a tale, too.
You have, and, so you can relate to that. So he was in sales. In 1913, he married Rose McConnell. She was come to buy some... something called Cotton Ale, which he was selling. It was a vegetable shortening.
Like Crisco.
Yeah, it was like Crisco at the time. And they met in 1913 and was soon married. They had a daughter named Rose. They had two sons, Russell, who later became a seven-term U.S. senator, and Palmer, who later became an oil tycoon. When sales grew scarce during World War I, Huey decided he was going to go to the seminary. So he went to Oklahoma Baptist University to become a preacher because he had this gift of gab. But that kind of bored him. So he decided instead he was going to be a lawyer.
Well, the Lord's work is not for everybody.
I know. And there's just so...
And it takes a commitment to feel... It's like when a devil's in here, she likes to say she's a reverend too, but she does not put the effort into it. She does not put the...
Well, she's kind of representing the dark side.
Well, and I was going to say she doesn't put her heart and soul in it, but she doesn't have a soul.
Exactly.
And I don't know that she has a heart.
We don't know. When, you know, at some point they'll do a kind of postmortem on her, and we'll figure
well,
it
she
out.
I believe she has a heart because you'd have to drive a stake through it to kill her.
I see. So anyway, Louis attended Oklahoma School of Law in Norman, Oklahoma, for a while until his funds ran out. He transferred to Tulane University Law School. That's in New Orleans. Again, after a year, he ran out of money, and money would be a problem. In 1915, though, he convinced the board to let him take the state bar exam. And he did well. He passed. Let me tell you, as someone who's went through law school, there are a few chosen people who can sit for the bar without any prep after law school. Maybe if you're like you're the top in your class. But most people do not. Most people study today for at least 2 or 3 months prior to taking it. How he could take the law, the bar exam, without going to law school was amazing.
What surprised me, a friend of mine just passed bar a couple years ago, and she, you know, did it later. I say later in life. She was about 33 when she did it. And I did not realize that it's basically once you graduate from law school, then you are taking other classes to prepare for the bar.
And they're very expensive classes.
She said, I believe she spent close to $5,000 preparing to take the bar.
Absolutely. And if you pass the first time, a lot of people don't pass the first time. So, that's why when I completed law school and I decided, you know, I didn't want to be a lawyer, I was not going to waste the time and energy to take the...
Well, what would have been your advantage other than having... I mean, you would have had to do the continuing education.
Exactly. You would have the malpractice insurance you would have to carry. I mean, it's a very expensive proposition. Right. And, you know, my focus was in on labor and employment law, which I can use in my job. So it just didn't seem... And when you graduate from law school, I don't want to get sidetracked in this, but if you're 22 and a firm hires you, you know, you're going to spend, you'll spend 5 to 7 years without ever seeing inside of a courtroom. You're just doing research and you're working 80 hours a week. And, you know, it pays off eventually, but you have to put a lot of hours in. And they don't want someone who's 40 years old. They want someone who's 22.
Who's 22. They can pay very little, and they can work 85 hours a week.
Exactly. And and then the other option is, as you mentioned, is private practice. And that you need some money up front to establish a clientele. So Huey taking the bar exam and passing it, it's kind of astonishing.
And that's what's kind of the contradiction in this guy, that he came across as
a boob.
Well, and, you know, the term that he used and the term that they use in Louisiana for the poor folk, poor rural folk, they called them shit kickers.
Mm-hmm.
Shit kickers. And he was basically a shit kicker. And he was extremely intelligent, but he never really let that come to the fore. He never showed that side in public.
Right.
He always seemed like a very simple, down-to-earth,
So he could relate to. We have to talk, you know, to set the scene a little bit. Louisiana was, last in almost every measure that, economically you could have. Education, it was last. Highway, it was last. Schools, it was
hospitals.
Last. Hospitals. Huey, you know, it was a kind of a fertile environment for someone like Huey Long to come along and take advantage of it. But anyway, in 1915, he passed the bar exam. He begins begins private practice in Winfield, Louisiana. Later, he moved to Shreveport, larger city. And he represented small plaintiffs against large businesses, including workman's comp cases. So he was working for, you know, the little man, the little guy. And that was something that would he continue throughout his political career.
What did he brag about, Timmy?
I don't know. Tell
said,
me.
Said, I never took a case against a poor man.
Oh, yes. Never took a case against a poor man. And, of course, one of the most powerful corporations in Louisiana at the time was Standard Oil, right? Because they had all, you know, right. all the oil fields.
They ran Louisiana.
Yeah, in the Gulf, but pretty much like BP does today.
Yeah, today, yeah.
And Huey took him on. I mean, he sued him for unfair business practices. And he, you know, continued to, throughout his whole career, even after he became governor and senator, to really go after Standard Oil. And that, you know, he said they were exploiting the state and taking the state's resources without giving anything back. And that made him a hero to, you know, the working class in Louisiana and the poor in Louisiana. It made him an enemy to the establishment in Indiana, in Louisiana, I'm sorry, and to, you know, and to the wealthy and to big business. So he started this David versus Goliath struggle when he started his law career.
Now there's a Timmy, not the, sorry to interrupt.
No, it's okay.
There's a great album, Randy Newman, Good Old Boys. Mm-hmm. You ever heard it?
No.
It's basically about Huey Long, and it's about Louisiana, life in Louisiana during that time. Randy Newman's from Louisiana. And
I just know him for Short People.
Short People and Buzz Lightyear song. You yeah. got a friend of me. But Good Old Boys it's from back in the 70s. You probably heard the song Let's Drop the Big One Now.
Yes.
That's on that. But he gets into, you know, he writes a couple songs about
the Kingfish.
Okay.
And we should explain. Huey got the nickname. He was nicknamed the Kingfish. And that name was given to him kind of as an insult.
Mm-hmm.
The Kingfish was, and we don't want to jump too far ahead, but the Kingfish was a character on a radio show at the time called Amos and Andy. And there was a character on there of a kind of a boisterous boob.
Yeah.
Who was always trying to sell people things they didn't need, and his name was the Kingfish. Well, his opponents started calling when he started his political career.
Mm-hmm.
Huey Long's opponents started referring to him as Kingfish, and instead of being insulted by it, he accepted the moniker.
And actually, he turned it around and used it against him because one of his slogans became "Every Man a King."
Yes, yes.
So
it's kind of like, I guess, with Obamacare. You know how that was kind of an insult.
Yeah.
And then later on, President Obama said, "I kind of like that.
I like it.
Yeah.
I want it."
Yeah. So it's the same with him. That's how Kingfish came about. But anyway, in 1918, he decided to get into politics, and he did so for campaigning for the Railroad Commission, and he went door to door. You know, it was a grassroots campaign. He drove all over Louisiana. He printed circulars and posters. You know, did all these stops, and he would, you know, give these speeches wherever he could, at PTA meetings or at county fairs. It was really, like I said, a grassroots effort. And he was elected. He was elected and moved to Shreveport. That was 1928. And he also then ran for, on the commission. There were oil companies were replacing, commission had regulatory authority over the oil companies. He fought to raise their taxes on the oil companies, he won. He won. And so there again, this whole, he's starting early off in his career fighting for the little man against the interests of big oil and the monopolies at the time. But, you know, it wasn't for long that the Railroad Commission was, you know, he had greater ambitions. Mm-hmm. So he ran for governor in 1920. or I'm sorry, he campaigned for John Parker, who was running for governor in 1920. But when he was elected, he kind of had a falling out. So in 1924, Long ran against Parker, and he tied Parker to Standard Oil and the political hierarchy. You know, he promised to drain the swamp.
And again, there's a contradiction with Huey Long here, because Parker believed in him, he campaigned for him, and then he found out kind of the first reality of real politics.
Mm-hmm.
And Parker was really beholden to Standard Oil, and that really disillusioned Huey Long.
Yes. So 4 years later, 1924, he runs against him. And Huey was known for wearing white linen suits. I know you wear a lot of white linen suits.
Like a little seersucker now and then.
Yeah,
it
became his trademark. In the election in 1924, he came in third, he and another candidate had privately opposed the Ku Klux Klan, which was very powerful at the time, which, you know, in Louisiana at the time, it was, you know, the Klan was very prominent, so,
you know. It was a political organization, you know, back then.
Exactly. But Louis said that rain on election day was suppressing the voter turnout. It's a rigged election. And so where his voters were in northern Louisiana, where there was a stronghold, they were unable to get to the polls because the dirt roads had turned to mud. Again, you know, there was very few highways. And
I don't know that there was a blacktop road in northern Louisiana.
At the time. Yeah. So instead, Long was reelected to the Public Service Commission, and he spent between 1924 and 1928 building his reputation and his political organization. He started to get a name for himself, and in 1928 he ran again for governor, and this time with the slogan, as you said, Colonel, he ran as a populist with the slogan, "Every man a king, but no one wears a crown." He adopted that from another populist Democrat. Huey Long was a Democrat, although he took on both parties. He was not your typical establishment.
He was kind of Bernie Sanders.
Or again, Donald Trump as a Republican.
Donald Trump is a Republican. Yeah,
without establishment support. But anyway, his slogan, "Every man a king, but no one wears a crown," he adopted that from the presidential candidate at the time, William Jennings Bryan, who of course ran for president, never did win, but he was a populist like Huey Long. And Huey ran in 1928, attacking the oil industry. He attacked utilities and the privileged, the wealthy. He said they were parasites who grabbed more than their fair share of the public wealth at the expense of the poor. He crisscrossed the state, campaigned in rural areas where, again, people were disenfranchised, like we were talking about the comparisons to the 2016 race. So at that point, you know, Louisiana was ran by political bosses in New Orleans. It's kind of funny, he'd give his political opponents funny nicknames, mm-hmm. like Buzzard.
Yeah.
In line with
like Crooked Hillary,
yeah, like Donald Trump with low energy mm-hmm. Jeb and Lion Ted Cruz. I mean,
Little Marco Rubio.
Yeah, so Huey Long did, you know, the same thing. At the time, as we mentioned, the entire state had about 300 miles of paved road and only 3 bridges in the entire state. The literacy rate at the time was in the nation, they had in Louisiana, was the lowest in the nation. They had 75% illiterate rate in Louisiana.
Literacy.
Yeah, most families could not afford to purchase textbooks required to send their kids to school. So if you were poor, even if you could go to school, if you couldn't afford the textbooks, you were out of luck. There was a poll tax, of course, that people had to pay. Poor white people had to pay just to vote, mm-hmm. alone. You know, African Americans left entirely out of the voting process. And that, you know, that suppressed 2 million votes right there. So only about 300,000 could afford to register the vote. In addition, they were literacy tests for blacks, and they had to take before they could, you know, vote. This was, you know, the Jim Crow South. Mm-hmm. And so, there was a lot of barriers in the way, a lot of voter suppression going on. But, Long won the 1928 gubernatorial race by tapping into class resentment among rural Louisianans. And like I said, and this is probably even true to this day, there are people in Louisiana who think Huey Long was the greatest thing that ever happened to mm-hmm. the state.
Yeah.
And as you said, there's people who think he was a dictator, and probably the truth is he was a little bit of both. But
yeah.
He proposed government services far more expansive than any time in the state history. Once in office as governor on May 21st, 1928, he moved quickly to consolidate his power. He fired hundreds of opponents in the state bureaucracy. At all ranks of the cabinet levels, all the way down to, you know, people working on roads. I mean, he put his people in, you know, it was a patronage system. And he used it to his full advantage, much like, you know, his opponents had done.
And one interesting thing that he did, Timmy, is that he played the poor white working class
mm-hmm.
against Cajun class down in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of the things that you say, you know, your house could burn down and ain't nobody in New Orleans care about you.
Uh-huh.
You know, so there was that kind of, a racial thing that he had going there too.
Sure.
That the Cajun, you know, in the southern part of the state, they don't care about you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I care about you. Right. They don't care about you.
I'm one of you.
I'm one of you. They're the problems.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of got, you know, the people in the northern part of the state started thinking, these poor Cajun people, well, they're my problem.
Yeah.
You know, not Standard Oil, even though they knew Standard Oil was, and
mm-hmm.
he came in, you know, with the thing, said, I'm going to take Standard Oil and I'm going to kick the ass and mm-hmm. I'm going to do whatever. But he did. And so one of the interesting things he did was in his inauguration, he invited everybody from northern, because Louisiana was two states.
Mm-hmm.
You had the North and you had the South.
Right.
Where you got New Orleans, Baton Rouge.
Mm-hmm.
He invited everybody from the North down for his inauguration as governor.
Mm-hmm.
And many of those people came. And they didn't really know what to make of these, you know,
mm-hmm.
chick kickers that showed up there.
It's kind of almost like Andrew Jackson bringing in, you know, his supporters into the White House after being inaugurated.
Yeah.
But, he was a man, you know, he was the voice of the common man and woman there in Louisiana. But it didn't, of course, it didn't sit well with the establishment at the time. Certainly didn't stand well with the, you know, the corporate Standard Oil and the ruling class there. But he went about filling vacancies in the state with his people, putting his people in charge from the very bottom to the very top, so that he not only was governor, but he was getting, you know, if you had a job at the state, you owed it to Huey Long.
Mm-hmm.
And he made sure that, you know, there may be a time when that bill come due, you were expected.
If you didn't pay, you was gone.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So he pushed a number of bills through the Louisiana State Legislature, fulfilling his campaign promises. These included free textbooks for poor children. He established the first adult literacy programs, night programs, that taught 100,000 adults who had not been able to read and write promote adult literacy. He started unprecedented public work programs, building mm-hmm. roads, building bridges, hospitals, educational institutions. And although his bills, his legislation met with opposition with many in the legislature and the wealthy, as well as the media. The media did not particularly like him either. But he used very aggressive tactics to ensure that his legislation got passed. He would often show up on the floor unannounced in the House and the Senate in Louisiana, twisting arms. He used the patronage system, as we said, and he would also threaten his rivals. He used of course, and it's a big problem today, is gerrymandering.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you define congressional and, in this case, state and state legislature districts, define them to your advantage. And it would actually put legislators out of the job, and he would get bills passed to do that. So you wanted to stay in the state legislature.
Yeah, he could gerrymander you right out of a job.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not to get too far off topic, mm-hmm. but something very interesting happened in Wisconsin last week
mm-hmm.
when they found that they were gerrymandering and it was unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
And that could have serious ramifications. When you think about it, our House of Representatives is made up of Republicans primarily,
mm-hmm.
And it's pretty much set that way because they got to draw the map in 2010. But that could very, very well change very quickly. It's supposed to happen again in 2020. Mm-hmm. But that could change because
I
think Democrats got 65% of the vote for a House of Representatives, but they got very little. They won very few of the races.
Yeah. My home, not here, but my home district is really weird. It's gerrymandered.
Mm-hmm.
And it is like, in the county next, if you look at it on a map, it looks like a snake.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really...
And that's what the one in Wisconsin. Yeah. Now, mine, where I'm at, is pretty straightforward. But everybody in my neck of the woods is Republican, mm-hmm. so they don't have to gerrymander that. But then they have to work through here on the state legislature. They mm-hmm. have, I mean, it's chopped up into...
Yes.
Part of my district is Avondale.
Mm-hmm.
But... The ways through,
which is a primary African American.
African American. So Avondale's a big block of my state thing.
Mm-hmm.
Avondale is across town,
mm-hmm.
and then these little 5, 8, 10 blocks of my neighborhood that's very Republican
uh-huh.
is lumped in with this because they know they're going to lose. You know what I mean?
Yes, it'll dilute the minority vote.
And they don't need it in our district.
Right.
They don't need the Republicans in our district.
Right.
So they just throw a little chunk. So it's... Yeah.
And gerrymandering has been done by both parties. And, you know, it's nothing new. It's been around for a long time. But Huey used this to his advantage. And when we get to his assassination, that is one of the theories is
that's what it came down to, possibly.
Yeah, it may have came down to him gerrymandering out the wrong person. But in 1929, as governor, Huey called a special session of both houses of the Louisiana legislature to enact a new 5 cent per barrel occupational license tax. You know, he's got all these programs that he's instituting. Now he needs some money to pay for it, for all these social programs. And he's going to tap his favorite adversary, Standard Oil, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to put a 5 cent per barrel occupation license tax on Standard Oil. Well, you know, the Standard Oil and the lawmakers in their back pocket went crazy over this, and it wasn't long that they were trying to impeach Huey on charges of blasphemy and abuse of power, bribery, misuse of state's funds. But they failed. But, you know, Huey would say that, you know, they try to impeach him all the time, and he would always prevail. But they did try, but they fell short. So he did not. They did not get the conviction in the Senate that they need to remove him from office. And he got his he got his occupation license tax through. But he made a lot of enemies with that little move. And so it wasn't long. Huey now had pretty much the state under his thumb, but he had greater aspirations. It was 1932. It was the middle of the Depression, and Huey thought it would be what he would like to do is to do what he did in Louisiana for the United States. So he needed a stepping stone so that he couldn't go up to the next level. So he decided in 1932 to run for the U.S. Senate. And since he basically controlled the whole state, it was a pretty easy election for him. He was elected U.S. Senator in 1932. He had his a guy named Oscar Allen was kind of his lackey, succeed him as governor. So Huey had, even though he was elected to the U.S. Senate, he was still basically, for all intents and purposes, running.
Yeah. He had Oscar Allen?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Running Louisiana with his handpicked successor, Oscar Allen, in charge. So in 1932, Long was elected to senator, and he was known, and he didn't make a lot of enemies in the U.S. Senate. He would give these long speeches.
They hated him.
They really did not like him at all. At the time, the Senate was different than it was today. It was an old boys club. And it was, people who kind of, they saw themselves as the higher house. And
they saw themselves as the elite.
Yeah, distinguished. And Huey would get on the floor and just rail and about, he had a program he called, I'm sure you'll get into more, Share the Wealth. And again,
it was a club.
Yeah.
The people, it was like almost a fan club of his.
Yeah. He would give these long speeches about, remember, this is 1932, so President Roosevelt, again, he was an early supporter of President Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. He took a lot of credit for a lot of the New Deal programs that come along because he argued that, this is what worked in Louisiana and we can do it nationally, and maybe pushed Roosevelt a little bit further to the left than he would have gone.
Normally done.
Yeah.
And he definitely made the public works programs larger.
Yes.
One thing Huey Long did, mm-hmm. Huey Lewis. That he did was every time they opened a school, mm-hmm. every time they opened a hospital, and they opened a beautiful hospital up in northern Louisiana, but every time one of these places opened, mm-hmm. he was there saying, I did this.
Yes.
Did this. So he didn't let these things happen quietly.
No.
So he became, you couldn't think of this school, you couldn't think of this hospital. This is the hospital that
Huey built.
These
are the roads that Huey built. These are the schools that Huey built. Your kids have textbooks to go to school because of Huey.
Yeah.
And also, he was the first politician to use radio.
Yeah.
And he used it a lot to reach his constituents.
It was his Twitter.
Yeah. So he was not well received in Washington even though he was a Democratic senator from state Louisiana, he did not necessarily go along with the program, and he was not beholden to the establishment. I mean, National Democratic Party did not help him get elected,
mm-mm.
and he did not owe anything to them. And as I said, he early on supported Franklin Roosevelt. But after he got up in Washington as a senator, he said that Roosevelt was not going far enough when he wanted this Share the Wealth program, which would take from the rich and distribute it to those who were without. At the time, President Franklin Roosevelt, called Huey Long the most dangerous man in America. You know who he said the second most dangerous man in America was?
Who was that?
This is trivia. Douglas MacArthur.
Two
of the most dangerous men in America at the time, according to Franklin Roosevelt. Most dangerous being Huey Long.
Because
he had this appeal. He was a populist.
Mm-hmm.
But he also had a tendency to abuse power.
Right.
And he had this dictator streak in him.
Yeah.
that he would not hesitate to use. And so, you know, there was a great fear of Huey actually running. You know, it was obvious that Huey was going to run for president in 1936.
Yeah, Timmy, let's just stop and reflect for a minute.
Okay.
It's just me and you here.
Yes.
There has not been an obscenity thrown about.
No, not yet.
No vulgar terms, no throwing of things, no...
Are you saying because Brandy is not here? That's why.
I am saying that. I'm implying that in, you know, a very strong way.
I think that our listeners might not... I think our listeners kind of like that tension.
Yeah, but, you know, our listeners don't have to sit next to the woman when she's melting down.
And they don't get things thrown at them.
Yeah, they don't get pinched. And assaulted. They don't get grabbed. Yes. They don't get...
Yeah. It makes good podcasts. It makes for a good podcast, but it's also dangerous if you're in a room.
Yeah, when you're sitting on the side of the table, the colonel's right arm all bruised up and beat up from her.
Well, tell us about Huey in Washington.
Well, now Huey's in Washington. He's a senator. Now, he's starting to think about the White House here. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, of course, he's still managing things back home. He's got Oscar Allen serving as a figurehead. And as you said, he's not well-liked by his colleagues in the Senate. Even members of his own party would avoid him.
Mm-hmm.
And they viewed him as unclothed and backwards.
Mm.
They were also annoyed by his political rhetoric and his ambitions. He'd give these, like you said, these lengthy floor speeches. And he started that nationwide Share the Wealth Club.
Mm-hmm.
And by the summer of 1935, Timmy, the Share the Wealth Club had 7.5 million listeners nationwide.
Yeah, there's this really, if you ever get a chance to look at on YouTube.
Or I'm sorry, Timmy, I got that wrong. The Share the Wealth Club had 7.5 million members nationwide. He had 25 million radio listeners.
Yeah, he was do national mm-hmm. broadcast. And if you ever listen, you can check him out on YouTube. And you know, you have to think about it in terms of that time period.
But he spoke in a weird way, jerky. And
a little amateurish. I mean, it looked kind of like a clown. You know, like you know, now you look back at like a video of Mussolini and he just seems like a fool, you know, foolish. But at the time, he would get up and, you know, and he had his, you know, his tie that was always too small.
Yeah.
And he would give these speeches and he would talk about, you know, he'd give these kind of down home country, you know, he was very intelligent, but he would talk in a way that could relate to the common people. And he would give these examples, you know, one example is where he's saying, you know, it's okay if you got this feast and the Rockefellers come. And
I was going to say, if you get a chance, look up his Rockefeller speech. Because Mr. Rockefeller, when you got enough food for you and your children and your great-grandchildren and your great-grandchildren and their great-grandchildren, that's okay. But leave some for us.
Yeah, and bring back some of that grub.
Yeah, bring back some of that grub. When you got enough clothes for your family and for your children and for your great, and he just keep going, save just a little bit for us. So he wasn't he put it in this context.
Yeah,
and he wasn't trying to take anything that the Rockefellers were even using.
Right.
You know, it's just you got way too much and you ain't even using it, and these poor people bastards over here need it.
Yeah. Yeah, especially at the height of the Depression, you know, it sounds pretty good. If you're unemployed and you can't feed your family, or you're, you know, in the Dust Bowl and you don't have a place to stay, and the bank is taking your home. I mean, that's a pretty powerful message.
You know, and I told Tanner, you know, my son is younger, and we were talking about the election. I said, you know, you're some poor bastard. You're living in Wisconsin. Maybe I went over this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's easy for us to take political sides and say, mm-hmm. well, Trump's evil.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's just use that narrative, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you remember when Ross Perot was running and he said, you know, that's that big sucking sound to all the jobs going to Mexico when you sign NAFTA.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you're some poor bastard living up in Kenosha, Wisconsin. You used to work at the car factory up there, but they closed the car factory and sent it down to Mexico.
Right.
And you lost your job, and you lost your house, and you mm-hmm. probably got a divorce from all the pressure and all mm-hmm. the strain and everything else. And who's the evil guy? The guy who signed NAFTA? Mm-hmm. I mean, in your, you know, from your point of view.
Right. No, I mean,
Donald Trump or the guy who signed NAFTA?
Right. It's, you know, and, something that people can relate to.
And these people were the same way. They had, you know, the Depression had come along. Mm-hmm.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Lost everything. Mm-hmm. They were looking for somebody.
25 million people unemployed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, yeah.
They were looking for somebody to say, hey, I hear you. Now, and not to get again too off track, the difference, the thing that I can't figure out here in this particular one is what, you know, Huey Long was saying, I'm going to build this for you. I'm going to do this for you. I'm going to do that for you. And I haven't, it seems like people in this election just were saying the whole system's corrupt and it's right. Broken and we need to redo
it. It seems like this, I mean, and, you know, I'm sure people voted for Donald Trump for different reasons, but just for me observing it, it's like the big middle finger. F you to all.
Yeah, it's not like there were a lot of promises
pox on all your
made.
Houses. Right.
Other than, you know, I'm going to bring the jobs back. I'm going to kill these treaties, which, you know, me and you being in the jobs we're in know that.
They're not coming back.
Right. Changes, you know, beyond our control happen. But I think that's a big difference is that he was talking about some very tangible things that people could really relate to.
Yeah. And if I guess I would say if you know, on a spectrum, Huey would be to Trump's left.
Yeah.
Right. He would be. But they use very similar tactics. They use very
similar approaches. Uh-huh. They tapped into this anger. They tapped into this feeling that people had not had voices, had been ignored, had not been heard. They had problems, and they were being ignored. And they were both smart enough to.
And they both were, I mean, and either one of them were really a part of the establishment, even of their own parties.
So it gave them a sense of, it gave people a sense that I can trust this guy because all the other people have screwed me. What do I got to lose?
And they're all against him.
Right.
So he must be for me.
Yeah, the enemy of my enemy.
Yeah,
is, exactly. You know, so it's very, it's interesting if you look at the two, but that's the one big difference that I saw was, you know, Huey Long was, and of course he limited himself to Louisiana, and it was just, you know, I'm going to build.
Well, he didn't last long enough to, he announced his run for the presidency, but.
Yeah,
he didn't get there.
1935 is.
So I think Trump is better. Is probably hoping for a better outcome.
than he had. Yes. Yeah. So in 35, he announces he's gonna challenge FDR for the Democratic National or the Democratic nomination.
And as you said, he has all these followers on this new thing called radio, Twitter. Not Twitter, but this new thing called radio. A lot of people are
25 million.
That's a lot of
people.
That's
a national audience.
Yeah, and you're talking about, you know, a time when the U.S. population was probably 150 million.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, the voting population was probably even smaller. 100.
Yeah.
So he's got 25 million listening to him. He's getting 60,000 letters a week from his supporters.
Yeah,
more and than the president was getting.
That's a thing you also see if you get a chance to look up some Huey Long on some of the YouTube videos. You get to see all this mail. I mean, it's just bags and bags and bags. And people loved him.
I'll find one of his good speeches that he gave and post put a link up there. It's very good.
Mm-hmm.
But now Long had some unfinished business in Baton Rouge. Now there was a lot of rumors of plots to assassinate Huey.
Well, yeah, he was making he's made enemies along the way.
Yeah, and the way he consolidated power, I mean, he basically was a dictator down in Louisiana,
mm-hmm.
and it actually led to talk of an armed insurrection by mm-hmm. his enemies there. Because remember, BP Oil is not a trifling little company.
No, they had a lot of power. They still do. Yeah. I mean, BP has Standard Oil at the time, but, his adversaries were very powerful people.
Right. So, now he's working with his cronies in the state legislatures on this redistricting plan.
Gerrymandering, basically.
Gerrymandering that would eliminate some of his political adversaries.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of these opponents was an old political foe, a state district judge named Benjamin Pavey, Timmy.
I think he called him Buzzard, if I remember right. He had, nicknames
for everybody. They were enemies for a long time. Now, Pavey was a staunch Republican. He'd opposed Long's redistribution of wealth in Louisiana. Long even had Pavey's wife, Marie Pavey, dismissed from a position as a third-grade teacher in Eunice, Louisiana.
Yeah.
I mean, so that's how petty Huey Long could be.
Oh, yeah,
So he was not a guy who often took the high road. He was any means necessary.
And he used his power. He wasn't like...
He abused his power.
Well, yeah, obviously abused it. But, I mean, even though a lot of his platform and a lot of his policies were idealistic,
mm-hmm.
his use of power wasn't idealistic.
No.
I mean, he had no problem.
No, he will crush you.
Huey
Long was not a guy who wanted to sit down and debate and hash out ideas.
Right.
It was his way or he crushed you.
Exactly.
And now on September 8th, Huey's in the state capitol building in Baton Rouge for a special session of Louisiana legislature. Now, they're pushing through a number of bills, including a measure to gerrymander opponent Judge Benjamin Pavey out of his job. Now, here's the generally accepted version of events, Timmy.
Okay.
Pavey's son-in-law, Dr. Carl Weiss, walks up to Huey in a corridor.
I think he was a dentist.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, I think Dr. Weiss was a dentist. Okay. I may be wrong about that, but I think he was.
So he walks up to Huey in the courthouse, and he shoots him at close range in the abdomen. Huey's bodyguards immediately opened fire on Weiss, and Huey tried to run away.
Now, this is the son-in-law of
Pavey.
Of the judge.
The judge
he's going to gerrymander.
Huey's up there for that purpose right there, to pass through legislation mm-hmm. that's going to put this judge out of a job.
Mm-hmm.
This is his son-in-law. Now, Weiss, the shooter, he was killed instantly. Now, Huey was brought to a nearby hospital. Emergency surgery failed to stop his internal bleedings, and 2 days later, Huey hung on for 2 days, Demi.
Mm-hmm.
September 10th, 1935, 11 days after his 42nd birthday, and his last words were, "God, don't let me die. I have so much to do."
Yeah. So Huey's dead. So
it gets down to figuring
out. I'm sorry,
out.
He was an MD. I was I'm mistaken.
Oh, okay.
Carl Weiss was an MD. But the, so.
Now let's get down to what the hell happened here.
Yeah, because on the surface, it's, he's defending his father-in-law, his mm-hmm. reputation, his family honor, by just going and killing the man who his political enemy, basically. But that leads to a lot of questions.
Well, it leads to the first question of the JFK thing was part of a bigger plot.
Right.
Because he had so many enemies. Another theory is that Weiss had only punched Long, and both men had been killed in a hail of bullets or a ricochet fired by the senators. I think he had 6 bodyguards.
Yeah, he was only... Everywhere he went, he had a large number of bodyguards.
Mm-hmm.
And the theory you're talking about is they got a little trigger happy.
They basically, and I've seen something on this, the way that they were positioned. They all pulled their guns out and started shooting. And we're lucky only two people got killed.
Mm-hmm.
None of the bodyguards got shot, which is an amazing thing because they basically set up a circular firing squad around them.
Mm-hmm. But Carl Weiss is killed.
And Yuri shot in the abdomen. He dies 2 days later.
I think he runs. He runs away to an antechamber, and he falls over, and then they get him to the hospital, where he eventually dies.
Yeah, and it's not like in the movie. If you see the movie with Sean Penn in it, All the Kingsmen. He didn't get to the middle of the thing. He got.
Yeah, All the Kingsmen was based on the life of Huey Long. Yeah. It's not a factual.
No,
it's not a biography, right?
But now there's a theory that although Weiss wounded Long, it was the accidental shooting of Long by his bodyguards that killed him.
Yeah.
Now, the official version of Long's shooting remained the generally accepted story that Weiss just walked up to him and shot him until about 1960, when a reporter for the Associated Press named David Zinman realized that no real investigative reporting had ever really been done about Weiss and his motives. Nobody ever tried to figure out why did this man who was an MD, a doctor, why was he so invested in? Because it wasn't him that was going to lose his job.
Right. And that's the problem I have with it. It's like you go to medical school and you sacrifice and you finally establish yourself and your career.
Well, he was married and had kids.
You're married, you've got kids, got dependents. Mm-hmm. And you're just going to go shoot the U.S. senator just because your father-in-law is going to lose his job? How does that make your family's life better?
Right. So anyway, this Zinman, who's a reporter, he interviews his wife's surviving relatives, okay? People with knowledge of the events, and that's something that no journalist had really ever pursued. So in 1963, Zinman publishes this book, The Day Huey Long Was Shot, and it's a pretty balanced presentation of the story. It kind of reads like a murder mystery, and Zinman did not come up with a definite conclusion as to what happened. But his work exposed serious doubts about the official version and gave the counter-theorists a more level debating field. It said, it's kind of like the Warren Commission report on the Kennedy assassination. That same year, a journalist from the Long era, who was an unabashed Kingfish fan, Herman Deutsch, published Huey Long, The Murder Case, an adoring portrait of Huey Long. And let's see here, Timmy. It reinforced the official version of the shooting.
That was done by Carl Weiss.
Yeah. Well, that Weiss shot him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a somewhat more objective account based on the extensive interviews was T. Harry Williams' 1969 Pulitzer-winning biography, Huey Long, which concluded that Weiss shot Long and missteps by the doctors who treated Long finished him off.
Yeah, that it was sort of malpractice or intentional.
So now up to 1986, and a political analyst and public relations consultant, Ned Reed, offered a blockbuster interpretation with his book, Requiem for a Kingfish, The Strange and Unexplained Death of Huey Long. The traditional view of the shooting was that a single bullet from Weiss's gun ran through Long's abdomen. Using hospital records and FBI records, interviews, Reed focused on the theory that it at least two bullets were fired into Long's body.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It's been suggested that one of these bullets may have come from his bodyguards that ricocheted off marble columns in the state house.
Yeah, because he was killed at the state house.
And there was no investigation into this.
No.
I mean, it was just Weiss shot him. Nobody even looked at the state house There was a lot of gunshots fired in that state house.
Yeah, there was. I forget how many Weiss had in him, but they unloaded their gun.
Yeah, and none of these guys had to account for their bullets or whatever, So now Reed examined the medical procedures in the Our Lady of Lake Hospital operating room. That's where he was operated on during his surgery. And it was crowded with Long's political allies and doctors arriving from New Orleans and elsewhere to assist with the emergency care. Now, Reed provides evidence, Timmy, that Long's urine was checked repeatedly. This is important.
Mm-hmm.
Contrary to the popular notion that the lead doctor, Coleman Vedrine, had failed to check for fatal signs of urinary bleeding. So that got, you know, kind of thrown out that the doctors were incompetent and whatnot. You know, the doctors took good care of him. But more importantly, here's something that is really interesting. Reed said that the doctors that night pulled a bullet out of Long's body and did not report it. A second bullet was left in the body, he claimed. The most significant evidence presented for this theory is a story related by Merle Welsh, the funeral director who served as a mortician for both Weiss and Long. In an interview with Reed 50 years after the accident incident, which, you know, would have helped if somebody would have talked to him 5 years later.
Yeah, sure.
This son of a bitch is 110 years old, so he's liable to tell you anything. But Welsh said that one of the operating room doctors came into the funeral home late at night, reopened Long's sutures, and probed the corpse until he pulled out a bullet. So that would account for bullet number two.
Second bullet.
Yeah, now Reed tracked down the funeral assistant who claimed to have the bullet on a key ring as a memento. Soon after the release of Reed's book, the writer Zinman also interviewed Welsh and heard essentially the same story, but said the mortician, then in his 80s, was clearly losing his mind. Now, Reed, though, did back up the two shots theory with several references. If true, his version of events suggests that someone other than Weiss may have fired a shot or two into Long. Could that be a bodyguard or an unidentified assassin? Reed couldn't say for sure, but he concluded the official theory of the shooting must now be relegated to the graveyard of hoaxes, frauds, and fairy tales, Timmy.
Yeah, we'll probably never know.
So now a new line of investigation opens up in 1985 when Carl Weiss Sr., he was 3 months old at the time, so that's another thing you got to keep in mind. This man had a three-month-old boy at home.
And he's going out and assassinating someone.
Yeah, and he had a cordial lunch with Long's son, U.S. Senator Russell Long.
Who was, as I said, I think he was a 7-time U.S. senator from Louisiana.
Oh, he was.
The Long family remained very powerful in Louisiana for many years after Long's death, even up until, you know, recent decades.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So anyway, he had a cordial lunch with him, and Weiss said he learned at the meeting of the existence of his father's gun, which had gone missing for 50 years. Weiss and James Starrs, a lawyer and scientist at George Washington University known for his forensic work on historic crimes, began seeking the weapon. Now, this is a weapon that supposedly Weiss used to kill Huey Long.
1935.
Now, in 1985, it was kept in a safe deposit box of the Mabel Gurr Bennings of New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
The daughter of the late General Louis Geer, the state's head of crime investigations in 1935, which is a peculiar thing that he would put in his own personal safety deposit box.
Yeah, I guess it was historic or something, and he wanted it as a memento.
So there's a long legal battle between these two, and they had to give up possession of the box, which was filled with memorabilia.
Mm-hmm.
So the Gare box is a safe deposit box that supposedly held the gun that killed Huey Long contained three things of great interest. A .32 caliber automatic pistol of the type Weiss owned. A .32 caliber bullet that had been fired and had a blunt tip from an impact. And photos identified as Long's coat showing bullet holes. The gun was identified as the one owned by Weiss. The court ruled the gun belonged to his son, who has allowed the pistol to sit on display in the old Capitol Museum in Baton Rouge.
So Carl Weiss Jr. gets
He ends up with the gun.
Yeah, right.
State police investigators fired a test bullet from the Weiss pistol and compared it under a microscope with a blunt nose bullet. The conclusion, the spent .32 caliber found in Gare's collection was not fired by the Weiss gun.
Oh.
So that makes it, that makes everything kind of interesting, because Weiss owns his gun.
Mm-hmm.
They pulled a .32 bullet out of Huey Long.
But it wasn't from that gun.
So it was probably not fired by one of the bodyguards, because they carried larger. They carried the typical old .38s.
Yeah.
Larger caliber. No one's ever produced a bullet as evidence of the one that killed Long. And don't you think that's peculiar that they would not have pulled these bullets out of his body?
Yeah, I think it was a rush job to get... I think they were trying to put it to bed pretty quickly. If you ever seen Ken Burns has an excellent documentary on Huey Long, if you ever get a chance to watch it. And I remember them interviewing the wife of Hodding Carter, who was a journalist in Louisiana at the time, one of the leading journalists. And, you know, they were from the well-to-do class in Louisiana. And she'd say, you know, she said that there wasn't a dinner party that she attended as a young woman where there wasn't discussion about killing Huey Long.
Mm.
And it was just something, she said, you talk like you talk about the weather. It was like,
yeah,
how are we going to get rid of that son of a bitch?
Well, and, you know, the same thing happened to FDR. This is a short story out. Mm-hmm. A guy said FDR told him, he said, every day this guy went and got a paper, and he paid for the paper. He'd look at the headline and give it back to the guy. And one day FDR or somebody asked him, he's like, you only look at the headlines.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, if what I'm, he said, I'm hoping for something to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd give the paper back, and he said, well, why don't you look in the paper and see if it happened? Mm-hmm. He said, oh, if what I want to happen happens, it'll be the headline. And what he was saying was he'd hoped somebody shoot FDR.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because FDR, for what, you know, the same, he's like Reagan.
Right, right.
For the same he is today.
Right.
He was very, very unpopular with a lot of people at that time.
So, yeah, so you had Huey, who was not only unpopular in Louisiana. Well, I mean, he was... Again, it depends on who you were at the time. He had very people who loved him. And I don't know if you're getting in, you'll probably talk about his funeral and all the people who attended. But he was also not only hated by the ruling class and the establishment class in Louisiana, he was a threat now to the whole country because he was going to run for president.
Right.
And as we already said, he was already called the most dangerous man in America by Franklin Roosevelt. So there was concerns that he would run, I guess it's like Trump-like campaign that mm-hmm. would find his way into the White House. And that scared a lot of people.
It did scare a lot of people. And there's a lot of people, you know, to this day, and there's no things that think that maybe the Democratic Party or some of FDR's allies were behind this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody really knows. Although, you know...
I tell you what, you can lead a movement of almost about anything. Civil rights, anything. You look at, like, Martin Luther King Jr. led the civil rights, you know, movement. Got the you know, 1964 civil rights legislation passed. When did he get killed? He got killed when he started talking about sharing the wealth,
right?
And he said, you know, he went down to Memphis and went to bat for the garbage men who were on strike.
Yeah.
When you start talking about sharing the wealth, you're going to make a lot of enemies.
Well, and you know, it's kind of funny, but we always joke about prostitutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, prostitutes. It's the only time sex becomes illegal is when money exchanges hands.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know. And that's a way, in a sense, I think I put it on the page the other day. It's a way for people to keep women down,
mm-hmm.
not give them power.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, you have the, of all the versions of the shooting, Moreau, who his belief is that Weiss shot him. If you have his coat, you have two holes in the coat. You have a coat. A bullet going in and a hole coming out. Now that does not account for the two bullets being in his body. One could have come from the front, one could have come from the back. There was not a, you know, long autopsy done because they just tried to deal with him and they he died and they buried him. So anyway, the final state police investigator, the determination that happened at that time, in the photos, they support a one-shot version of events. The hole in the front of Logan's or Long's coat was consistent with the very close-range shot from a .32 caliber handgun. The hole in the back of his clothing was consistent with a bullet exit wound. Now, here's what's peculiar about this, Timmy. If you know a lot about guns, you know a .32 is probably not going to pass through a guy through his abdomen. You know, it's gonna go in there and tumble around, do a lot of damage. So if there's two holes, there's probably a good possibility there's two bullets. So that doesn't make sense to me. You know, you can shoot a high powered .22 through somebody, but a .32, chances are it's not going to go through the person. You hit him in the leg, a calf or something, but through the abdomen, that's a lot of fat, a lot of tissue to go through.
So the theories here are, one, this Carl Weiss, it just says that, you know, the accepted story is he was assassinated by this Carl Weiss, who then was murdered there by the bodyguards who just unloaded their weapons into Weiss.
Yeah.
The second theory is he was shot by Weiss, but also by the bodyguards, during this shootout. And the third theory is any combination of the first two. He survived that, but it was medical malpractice. Once he was taken to the hospital, the doctors did not treat him appropriately, and he may have survived had it not been for the doctor's poor medical care given to him.
Now, his son, Carl Weiss's son, who met with Russell Long, the senator, to this day insists that his father did not even shoot him.
Yeah. And then I guess then the fourth theory is this is all a sham and there were more powerful people involved.
There were more powerful people. There's...
because we
a
know
couple
we,
theories that his own bodyguard shot him on purpose, not accidentally. That Weiss came up and punched him in the stomach, but it, you know, that leads into a long conspiracy. But you know, Lee Harvey Oswald, look at him; he was dead a day later.
Yeah,
you know, and that Weiss was part of something larger.
And I can see the rationale for someone who is angry that, you know, they're screwing over my father-in-law. They're screwing him. I'm going to take a swing at this son of a bitch. That you can see.
Right.
But here I am, a doctor. I've got a one-year-old child at home. And if my father-in-law is going to be out of a job, you know, he's an elderly man at this point, the judge. I forget how old he was, but he was elderly at this point. And this is before, you know, there was Social Security. It's 1932.
Yeah.
Social Security didn't come about until 35. So, you know, he's going to be the sole breadwinner of that whole family. Are you going to go and with a one-year-old son at home and kill this man? I mean, logically, it doesn't make sense. Now, people commit murder for a lot of different reasons, and it's not always logical. But it doesn't seem like it would be something that was well thought out, if that's the case.
No, and there were several witnesses, Timmy, but the better part of these were his bodyguards.
Yeah.
And when you think about it from that, if he comes up and just says, you son of a bitch, and goes to punch him in the stomach, and his bodyguards overreact, his bodyguards are just going to, you know, because bodyguards... they carry a .38, you know, police special.
Yeah.
That thing only holds 8-6 shots, you know, whatever type it's going to be. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that somebody's got a gun in their sock, somebody's got a gun tucked away, and they shoot this son of a bitch and realize they shot Huey Long too. And they got a dead body laying on the floor that they've shot 45 times. It doesn't have a gun. And Huey shot too.
Yes.
it's not all that, you know, out of the realm of possibility that somebody says, oh, yeah, here's the gun he came up and tried to shoot him with. Because, remember, that bullet did not match, you know, the bullet that they had.
Yeah. And then the other thing, the other possibility was that it was the bullet ricocheted off one of the columns.
Off one of the columns,
And the State House. That Huey Long built, by the way. House, he died in his
Which is bullet. another funny thing, because the .32, again, not carrying that much power.
Mm-hmm.
Ricocheting off of a column would definitely not cause the thing to go through you.
Yeah.
You know, it would lose too much energy.
So there's a lot of questions about this death steal. What do you have a favorite theory?
My favorite theory is that he did punch him in the stomach, that he didn't have a gun at all, and that the bodyguards opened fire on him.
Yeah. And inadvertently shot Huey Long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then there may have been some, there may have been some medical malpractice as well.
Now, it did not end his political strength or the Long family, Timmy. His widow took over his seat in the Senate, and then his son was elected to the Senate in 1948, and he served until he retired in 1987. So that's 39
Russell
years
Long,
in there.
They were still a strong political force. I know, when I was growing up, you always heard about the Long family of Louisiana.
Yeah. Earl Long served, his brother served, three terms as governor of Louisiana. After his death, his body was laid in state at the Capitol building in Baton Rouge, and millions of Louisiana, poor and working class, lined up for miles and miles, Timmy, to pay their last respects to the kingfish.
Okay.
And that is the end of Huey. But
Huey.
I think there are similarities between this and we don't know, because, you know, Donald Trump has never been a senator or anything else. We don't know what his ruling style will be. But there are many, many parallels, and I think the biggest parallel
it's easy to see. It would not be hard to see him being autocratic. And that certainly would describe Huey Long. He was autocratic as well.
Yeah, I think, though, Huey Long was going to run into problems, because it's very easy to be autocratic, as we've seen in our own state. It's very easy to be autocratic at a state level.
Mm-hmm.
When you get into a federal level, we were talking politics. You know, the boys are pretty interested in politics. And I said, the problem that you run into right now, if you're Donald Trump coming in,
mm-hmm.
is that you have, again, you really aren't part of the Republican establishment.
Mm-hmm.
Some are going to fall in line, some aren't,
mm-hmm.
But they don't necessarily like you.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Senate, it's only a 52-48 split,
mm-hmm.
so you only need a few to flip. You know what I mean? So
absolutely.
It's going to be hard to be very autocratic.
And
you don't have that kind of power.
I think even at the state level, I think Jesse Ventura found that out when he was governor of Minnesota. He couldn't get nothing done.
Well, Arnold. I mean, Schwarzenegger, Arnold got some few things done, but again, when you run as Schwarzenegger, as Jesse Ventura,
mm-hmm.
as a populist, making a lot of promises that we're going to get this done, we're going to change, drain the swamp, mm-hmm. we're going to do this, do that. You're running against a whole machine that it's very easy to shut you down.
And that they have no allegiance to you.
And it's in their interest to keep things the way that it is.
Absolutely.
It's
hard to drain the swamp.
Well, there's
all right,
no
interesting
end to
story.
The stuff. You know what? And it's nice to be able to do something where I don't feel so dirty, Timmy.
Well, I'm sorry that we didn't do Huey, Louie, and Dewey for you.
Well,
maybe we'll get the.
I would have been quite prepared for that had we done it because
you did pretty well on Huey Long, though.
Well, Louie, what many people don't know is he spent some time in prison.
Oh, Louie, nephew of Donald Duck? I did not know
Louie
that.
Louie was a ne'er-do-well. He was...
Well, I heard that Dewey had an alternative lifestyle, but I didn't.
Yeah, Dewey was part of the DLGBT community.
Was he really?
Well, it's the FLBG, foul LBGT community.
I didn't realize that.
And then, Louie was more of a... he was a duck gun runner.
Really?
Yeah.
I always learn something when I do these podcasts with you. Never learn much from Brandy, but I always learn something.
You know what you do learn from Brandy? Some of the most vile words and terms you ever. I mean, I'm going to say this.
Cockholster.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, forgive disgusting. Us, fellow listeners, but she's a vile woman.
Disgusting.
Oh, it's just. And it feels like almost. I mean, it feels like we're doing a real podcast.
I know. You know, it feels amazing. Like a real history podcast.
Like somebody out there might have learned something. Yeah. You know?
But I'm sure we'll be back to serial killers when Brandy comes back.
Well, we got to do a serial killer for Dottie.
Yeah. She likes serial killers. My mom is very fond of serial killers. You got some shout outs for us, Colonel?
Today I got a bunch of shout outs.
All right. Let me
out. Stay with me, people. Of course, we always start our shout-outs with Tasha.
Yeah, lovely Tasha from California.
Tasha, it's always great to see you when you got time to show up on the page.
Hope she had a great Thanksgiving.
Oh, we hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. Now, I got to give a special shout-out, and I got to spend a little bit of time on this one, Timmy, because this is something else.
Okay.
Tiffany.
Tiffany, yes, Tiffany Bell.
Tiffany Bell.
In Michigan.
In Michigan. Her son, Bo, last Saturday.
Bo Bell.
The Lumen Christi.
That sounds like a football player's name, doesn't it?
He is a football player, yeah. Bo Bell. He just sounds like, he's going to be a Heisman winner, trophy winner.
Bo knows football.
His team, the Lumen Christi team up in Jackson, Michigan, won a Division VI state title.
Oh, wow, congratulations.
Bo was named the Jackson City Player of the Year.
Wow.
Up there. And football is not a small achievement up there.
That's a big deal.
If you've seen some of the running backs that are coming out of that area, some of these guys are going on to big, big-time schools.
Well, congratulations to Bo and to Tiffany.
So, and you know the thing I always loved, really, about Tiffany will post about this team. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I noticed in a theme I caught on is Tiffany never, ever posted about her son. Mm-hmm. She always posted about how great the team did. And I seen an interview with her son, and her son really kind of, he's a very mature young man, mm-hmm. and he really kind of played down what he has achieved as opposed to what his offensive line has mm-hmm. done, what his team has done,
Oh, that's great.
How
very
it was
humble.
Just his job. It was his job to step up and do something because these guys were working so hard for somebody to be able to step up and do something.
Provide that opportunity.
Yeah, so a big shout out and a big congratulations to you, Bo. That's an amazing achievement. Jeff Girdley, how you doing? Sam Hildebrand.
Hey, Sam.
Angie Ball. And, we, of course, Jennifer and Linda, we got them on the front end, but we always give them another one. Missy Dean Horton, Britt and Chris.
Hey, Missy.
Celine.
Hey, Celine.
Jeff Chestnut and Teresa Slavin. And I like to just call him Tommy Boom Boom.
Tommy Boomershine.
And we got Shonda and Larry.
Yes, doing the God's work out there for the folks in South Dakota.
Yeah, and they are a committed couple, ain't they?
Yeah, they really are.
I mean, they are. If everybody in the country was as committed to righteous causes as they were, we'd be a much better place.
Shannon is too. Shannon.
Oh, Shannon Rossett. Yeah. And Shonda, I did it. Shonda, she asked me what was it I always said after her name, and she thought I was saying the toll bridges, mm-hmm. and it's the Trow bridges.
All right, you got that right.
The Trow bridge couples.
Yes. Thank you for listening, guys.
Yeah, Colton and Phyllis Munson, Aaron Wentz, and, of course, Donna Curran and that dog of hers. Mm-hmm. Brian and Lisa Lawton, Livia Meyer, lovely young Fallon, and lovely young Katja.
Fallon had, a rough holiday, so special shout-out.
Oh, did you, Fallon?
Yeah, special shout-out to her.
I seen that Fallon had posted that somebody was having medical problems, but I did not have context of who that was.
Yeah, well, special thoughts to Fallon.
Fallon, yes, we are definitely thinking about you. Monica, I'm going to get this right this time. Monica D. Agostino.
Yeah, I think she's my Fitbit buddy.
Oh, is she?
Yeah, but... I don't think she's, I've challenged her, but I don't think we've started yet, so.
Well, Monica, I double dare you to be my Fitbit buddy.
Oh, you were killing.
I was up in Chicago, I was putting so many steps.
If you walk across the floor, Monica, you'll beat Chuck.
Let's see, Bridget Clavey, Byron Snellings, Big Denny Mack, William Truax.
Is Denny from this area? I saw him at a picture of him. He posted at a Bengals game a long time ago. Yeah, so I don't know if he's originally from here, but hey, Denny, let us know what's going on.
Angie Cobes, Amber Krupp with a peanut butter pie. She was bragging about that again. Gina Spillane and Trixie, Stephanie Quick, Sydney and Michael.
Yay, Michael just had a birthday, so happy birthday, Michael.
Jamie Tarantino.
Hey, Jamie.
Laura O'Reilly, Gabby Lewis, Tara V.
Bond.
Jean Bond.
That's right. Lydia, Brandy McBride, Maggie Glover. I'm sorry. Jeff Appel, Christine
Bourgeois.
All right. And Katie.
Moorhead.
Katie Moorhead. Lovely. I just hit my own mic.
Lovely. Lady.
Lovely Katie Moorhead. Mary Ray.
Hey, Mary. We haven't heard from Mary in a while. So post something, Mary.
Post something so
we're
we know you're okay, Mary.
Up there in upstate New York.
Rebecca Montanle.
Hey, Rebecca.
Mike Eisenhower.
Hey, Mike.
Danielle Fredrickson. Valerio Bishop. Nancy Palomino.
Hey, Nancy.
Kim Kamikaze. Jennifer Hawkins. Tara Nee. Lindsay O'Brien McMillan. Sunyana Satish. Eddie Rushing, Yo Handler, Sammy James, Jason Dykes, Amy Carol Payne, Tyra Jenkins, Annette Petrie, Steph Glenn, Niloy Khan, Christina Montana.
Hey, Christina.
How you doing, Christina? Maria Barber, Jennifer Potts, Cindy Overstreet Hamilton, of course, Paul Mampilli, Mike Arnold, Melissa Dubrano. I always want to make a lube joke out of her name, but I don't.
Great restraint there, Colonel.
Brittany Powell, Heather Hall, Heather Poole, Jeff Hopkins. Now, we got some new listeners I want to give some shout-outs to.
Well, maybe not new listeners, but new to
new to our Facebook page.
Yeah, and our Facebook page is History Dweebs, the podcast. You join us, we interact with everyone there, and it's a great group of people.
Yeah, you can learn some very, very disturbing things about the people there.
Yes, you can, but it's fun.
I got Ron Radsky. Gaetano Sapienza, Kevin Behan, Carol Nash, Sheila Mae Cebu, Heather Marshall, Susanna Sheldon, Caroline Stoffel, Romani Danger Howard.
Your middle name is Danger.
Yeah, I don't go by that.
You're kind of like Carlos Danger.
Yeah.
Yeah, Anthony Weiner.
Yes, exactly.
Wasn't that his alias?
I posted a picture of my thumb on that, by the way, today, Timmy.
Oh, good. I'm glad it was your thumb and nothing else.
Well, have you noticed I got an exceptionally long thumb, Tim?
No, I haven't.
Genesis Lopez Alicia, Michael Daniel, lovely young lady. Radhika, and tell me if I get this wrong. Radhika Smith.
I think that's right. She is very lovely, you're right.
And of course a new one, Jennifer Moyer.
Yes, thank you, Jen. You're very kind.
As always,
she says she's been listening to us for a long time.
We cannot skip the lovely Lady Beverly.
You better not skip the lovely
Sully.
Lady Kate.
Kate McCarthy.
Yes.
I was just teasing you, Kate. We're really going to get you.
You know who thought of you, Kate.
Let's see.
You know who else had a birthday?
Oh, we got to get our birthday shout-outs.
Yes.
Well, I got a couple. I had them on the Colonel's crew here.
Okay.
So let's get to the Colonel's squad. We got Angie Ball.
Yes.
We got Nicola.
Yep.
That's
hurtful since I have a law degree and you're using her as your counsel. But
yeah, but she's, you know what? She just looks like she'd be getting in the courtroom and rip you apart, Timmy.
Well, yeah, that's true.
And I got my enforcer, Allie.
Allie
had a birthday.
She did. Happy birthday, Allie.
Did you know? And I'll tell you something strange about Allie. Me and Allie are friends on Facebook. Mm. Now, Allie would post these pictures, okay? Mm-hmm. Like change your profile picture or whatever.
Yeah.
And I thought they were just kind of like cute pictures that she was pulling off the internet, mm-hmm. you know, and posting. These were pictures of Allie.
Yeah.
I mean, she's an adorable woman. She's a beautiful woman.
She is. And she's very smart.
Very smart. And I'll
tell you. And if you haven't checked out her podcast yet, check it out.
Her and Charlie.
It's Insight. It's much better than this podcast. Yeah. Much, much better.
But I'll tell you, the thing about Allie is she's scary ass crazy, Timmy.
Well, she is Australian.
Yeah, she is Australian. And Miss Montana, I believe, is.
Did you say Teresa Slavens?
Teresa Slavens, I got her.
Okay.
Let's see. We got little Sarah Mimosa.
Karen Barnes.
Jennifer Burdick, mm-hmm. who had her birthday.
Yes, happy birthday, Jennifer.
And Karen Barnes.
Yes.
The two Irish lasses, Janet Fitzgerald and Frances Doughton.
Cindy Lou.
I did not get to run into her. I thought maybe I was up in Chicago and I'd run across Jessica Williams.
Yeah. Hey, Jessica.
You know, because it's a real small city up there. And I thought I'd just be walking down the street. I'd run into somebody at the shop and say, hey, aren't you Jessica Williams from the
Mayberry
Beach?
Up there?
Yeah, exactly.
What about Big John Holmes? You didn't give him a shout out.
Big John Holmes. Okay. Let me write that one down because I got to straighten out my list. Amanda Bocce Ball, of course.
Of course.
And Shannon. Shannon is just out doing the Lord's work.
She is. 24/7. With Amnesty International doing God's work. Thank you very much, Shannon.
Yeah, so that's... And I got the lovely, lovely Lady Beverly. I've already covered Sully. He deserves his own shout-out.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the one and only Dottie Scott.
Thank you, Mom.
Thank you, Dottie. These
nice microphones for us.
These microphones seem to be working out real good. Now, you got to be careful with them because I tend to bump into mine. And
I know. I do, too. So we'll get used to it.
We'll get used to them. But we feel like professionals. We might not act like professionals.
We don't sound like professionals.
Our material is pretty good, but we don't really present it well.
Our material is absolutely awesome.
Our material is awesome.
Did you say Jahara? I would not want Jahara.
I did not, because I thought you always got Jahara.
Yeah, she did. She's on our Patreon list.
Jahara sent me a message on Thanksgiving, wishing me a happy Thanksgiving. It was very lovely.
She's over in Italy, I think.
I believe she's in Spain too.
Oh, is she? I know she's in Europe. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Where can people find us, Colonel?
Well, the best place to find us is on iTunes.
On iTunes,
and what we'd really love is if you could give us a review on iTunes.
Yes.
All you got to do is click on a little picture of our show, and it'll say a spot for reviews, and you can read them. And then it'll say leave review, and you can leave one.
We would really, really appreciate that because that's how people find us.
Now, some people have said we want the whole. You can go to Libsyn and do a search for History Dweebs. Mm-hmm. And you can find a whole back catalog on there.
I can't believe you forgot Brian Snelling. You forgot Frances Doughton. You forgot
I got Frances Doughton.
M. Waterfall.
Timmy.
William Trowell. I forgot William.
Scott, my right-hand man.
I don't know what you're doing. Yes, so you can find us on Facebook. We have two pages. We have the History Dweebs page, which we post. We update sometimes. It's just with real history stuff. And then History Dweebs, the podcast. And that's where we interact with all of our listeners. So we encourage you to join that group. It's History Dweebs, the podcast on Facebook. Shout out to my friend Sherry. Shout out to Fat Boy Gardner, who is neither fat nor a gardener.
Yeah.
And I've got a couple messages recently from listeners. Someone wants to be on our show. We don't do that only because we found...
We don't know how to do things remotely.
Well, doing it through Skype and doing it through the telephone, the sound quality is just horrible. So we don't do that. But thank you for volunteering to come on. And I'm sorry, I don't have his name right now, but I'll look it up and get it next time. But you can also find us on Twitter at HistoryDweebs1. That's where Fatboy Garner follows us. And I can't think of anything else. Can you, Colonel?
I could not. Jeff Chestnut had to suffer through a game with me last
night.
Our
good friend Jeff Chestnut down there in Dominica.
Yeah, yes. The Broncos blew one last night.
Yeah, well, so. You can't win them all.
But no, I believe I covered everybody, and this was it was nice doing a real podcast with you, as close as we're going to get to
a real podcast. Yeah, it really is. Thank you, everyone, for joining us, and we'll see you next time on History Dweebs.
Good day, listeners.
Bye, everyone.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.